Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It is Friday, November 9, 2007, and this is the day when Americans really need to start paying attention to what's going on in California all over again. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, in just recent days, signed into law what has been known as Senate Bill 777. It is a law that says that in the California public schools, there can be nothing that demonstrates a bias against persons on the basis of sexual orientation or gender. Now, that may sound innocuous, but when you start tracking the issue out, it's hardly innocuous. It's a major social revolution. It's also an invitation to legal and procedural insanity in the schools. What does that mean? What doesn't demonstrate some kind of bias on some ground of sexual orientation or gender? What about bathrooms? What about locker rooms? What about homecoming kings and homecoming queens? What about pictures, you know, in a textbook? How many gay pictures do there have to be? How many same-sex couples do they have to be in order for it not to demonstrate what could be charged by someone as being a demonstration of bias? Now, the reason this is so timely right now is because in California, even though the governor has signed this bill into law, by the way, without a single Republican voting for it in either house of the California legislature, even though he signed it, there is a recourse in California law for voters to be able to put the issue on the ballot before the law can take effect. All they need, and that's kind of an understatement, isn't it? All they need are 400,000 legitimate signatures in the petition drive there in California. You may be living in Arizona, Alabama, or Connecticut right now, wondering, why should I be concerned about this? Let me tell you why. You need to be concerned about this because the state of California is so dominant by size and influence in the public school movement that public school textbook publishers are going to be targeting their books for sale in California. So even though this law may not have any effect immediately in terms of what happens in Arizona and Alabama, the textbooks available for your schools, for your children, will be affected by this if the law goes into effect. Now, in just a few moments, we're going to hear together a classic broadcast from this program where we had on a specialist to talk about the Senate bill 777 and what it means. Karen England is going to be our guest. She's going to be talking about what this means not only for California but for the nation. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. Now, Karen England is also spearheading the effort to get the signatures for the reconsideration of this bill. And all they're asking for is to put this before the people of California. Here's my confidence. If the people of California have the opportunity to vote on this, they'll vote the right way. The people of California made very clear that they believe marriage is the union of a man and a woman, and did so through a public referendum process, a petition process, whereby they got to vote on the issue. Now, it looks like the California legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger are calling upon the schools to do the opposite of what the people there voted for. Let's put the issue back in the people's hands. So this is an issue that affects all of us and should concern all of us. You know, earlier this week we were talking about the issue of divorce. The International Herald Tribune and the Associated Press are out with a report that there was a divorce fair held in Vienna, the very first of these. Here is from the report. It says that Vienna seemed like a good venue to launch the mirror image of the marriage fair, with many here who say, "I do," ending up declaring, "I want out." In other words, divorce is now so rampant in much of Europe and in Vienna, Austria, as one illustration, that they thought it just might be a good idea to hold a divorce fair. Now, some of you are no doubt aware of marriage fairs. This is where the people that are the caterers and the people with facilities to rent and the people selling everything from cakes and flowers to rental tuxes. They're all there, the bridal dress people, selling and showing their wares. And if you are a prospective bride, and generally a prospective bride and mother and friends, I don't think there are too many grooms, prospective grooms who are there intentionally, then you go to these fairs and you say, "Well, I like that dress. I want this. We'll sign up for this caterer. I love that cake." I can understand a marriage fair. It's just a part of the consumerism of the culture. But a divorce fair? I mean, just think about what this says about the society. Divorce is now so rampant that it's now a consumer market. And we're going to hold a divorce fair, so these people in Vienna, in which they're going to be putting all this up. Now, listen to the kind of vendors who were there displaying their goods and services at the Vienna divorce fair. Listen to this. It included mediators, lawyers, and laboratories offering paternity tests, and detectives ready to sign up to catch your spouse in a wanton act. Now, this just gets to an even more perverse level. Just imagine there you have a consumer fair targeted towards divorce and the breakup of marriages. I guess it should be some solace to us that there weren't that many people who went to the fair, but it tells us a whole lot that there are enough who would market their goods and services to believe that such a fair might be a good idea in the first place. The New York Times is out with another parallel story I found very interesting, and that is new lines of greeting cards whereby persons who are having divorces decide to tell their friends and family and neighbors that they are doing this. The New York Times actually publishes in the article facsimile versions of some of these divorce cards and things like that. There are now printed divorce cards. Stationers are creating personalized announcements that look and read like wedding announcements. In other words, there are people who are now so proud of their divorces that they are sending them out in terms of announcements like they had sent out announcements of the wedding. Andrew Cherlin, a sociologist who specializes in the study of American families at Johns Hopkins University, says that nearly half of all marriages end in divorce. Nonetheless, he says that divorce announcements are something, quote, you wouldn't have seen two generations ago. He said this, it would have been like announcing an out-of-wedlock pregnancy. The fact that people aren't embarrassed to send out a divorce announcement tells you how routinized divorce has become. Indeed. So you have in Europe divorce becoming a market, and you have in the United States greeting card lines celebrating divorce as a major life event. Other things going on in the news all the time. The National Council of Churches has announced a new general secretary. The new general secretary is himself a man of some controversy. It is the Reverend Dr. Michael Kinneman, and he is going there from Eden Theological Seminary in St. Louis. The interesting thing is that he, who is a member of the Disciples of Christ, was actually voted down as the top officer of his denomination because he was thought to be too liberal. But now the National Council of Churches, perhaps one of the most liberal religious bodies in America, has decided that he is the man to give leadership for the new generation of that ecumenical body. It comprises 35 member denominations, and as their own press release indicates, they have had a difficult financial history. And even as the election of their new general secretary was made known, he is at this point the nominee, it was also made known that they're experiencing a major staff reshuffling in order to save funds. The body's been hemorrhaging money the same way its member denominations have been hemorrhaging members. It's interesting that if you look at the 35 member denominations of the National Council of Churches, you'd be hard-pressed to find a growing denomination in that number. One of the denominations that is a member of the National Council of Churches is the United Church of Christ. The president of that body, perhaps the most liberal of these mainline Protestant denominations, the president is John Thomas. He was arrested outside the White House protesting the Iraq War on October the 10th. Now, this is from a news report by Mark Tooley. He wrote, it was rather anticlimactic. The confrontation was scheduled for the lunch hour, perhaps to encourage an audience of office workers on their break to at least stop and watch. Not many did. Although a UCC news release after the arrest referred to 50 UCCers in supportive attendance at the arrest, the crowd is probably closer to half that size. Now, this news article was really interesting to me because it opened my eyes to something I really hadn't thought about before. There are people who get their kicks out of getting arrested in front of the White House for protesting, but it happens so often now, it is so routine that it happens without an arrest. You have to bring your own entourage now to witness you being arrested. This, to me, is just a parable of what's going wrong in mainline Protestantism. They're losing members by the millions. They're abdicating the gospel. They're defying church doctrine. They're redefining the entire faith. And the way they want to make headlines is by getting arrested in front of the White House. But it's really hard to look like a beleaguered prophetic voice if you don't have someone to witness your arrest. So you bring an entourage. How long will it be? We got divorce fairs in Vienna. How long will it be before in Washington, D.C., someone comes up with the brilliant idea to franchise an entourage. Entourages are us, I think, would be a great idea for a commercial venture in Washington. This way, you can hire some folk to come witness you getting arrested for your prophetic voice and your protest in front of the White House. Folks, the way law actually comes to pass and the way political ideas become law is something that Americans have to track and note with deep care. What happened in California is a warning to us all. The Senate Bill 777, a radical piece of social engineering, now signed into law by California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. When we come back, we're going to hear a classic program in which I'm going to be interviewing Karen England, who's leading the effort to get that issue now before the California people, before the law takes effect. This affects not only California, but it affects you wherever you live, and the children, eventually, in your public schools, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The field of the schools, the public schools in particular, is one of the most contested areas of terrain in the entire American society. And the reason for that's clear. And we've talked about this before, but it has to do with the fact that that's where the kids are. And if that's where the kids are, that's where the future is. That's where you're molding minds and shaping persons for the future. Thus, if you have an agenda, if you have a social or ideological agenda, you have to direct yourselves to the schools. Where else could you direct yourself? In other words, you're not going to be changing a lot of minds by going to the AARP meeting that's going to impact the future in the same way as when you're reaching children. If you want to shape the way the society is going to be contoured and the kind of convictions that are going to drive this, you're going to look to the future. Now, what's really interesting is that, of course, if you want to affect change, you've got to get the people who are members of AARP to vote for what's going to be happening for those kids that would be their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and beyond. And so you have to be able to package your reform effort or your social agenda in such a way that it can get enough political support to pass. And then you just press it further and further and further. And that's what we see in the public schools all the time. But nothing has quite raised the concern that is now coming from California, where the California legislature, the General Assembly, has passed a Senate Bill 777. It's now been signed into law by California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this new law, well, let me just read to you what it said in terms of the legislative intent. I'm reading to you here from the California state document. It says, this bill would revise the list of prohibited bases of discrimination and the kinds of prohibited instruction and activities, and instead would refer to disability, gender, nationality, race or ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, or any other characteristic contained in the definition of hate crimes as contained in the penal code. Now, that language might sound to you somewhat innocuous, but the effect of it appears to be anything but innocuous. Our guest today is Karen England, who is Executive Director of the Capital Resource Center, which is California's oldest and largest pro-life public policy organization. Ms. England, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Mueller.
Now, can you just bring us some clarity and explanation to this? Because an awful lot of Americans are just hearing about Senate Bill 777, and it's unclear what in the world this is and why it should have our concern.
Well, I'd like to bring you some clarity, but it is a little difficult. This is an outrageous piece of legislation that, as you said, was signed by Governor Schwarzenegger. It adds, this is the exact language tucked away on about page 18 of the bill, that says no teacher instruction or school-sponsored activity that promotes a discriminatory bias against, and then it lists transsexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality, gender, and in California, we've changed the word gender already in law. It's not the gender you were born with. It's the gender you believe you are that day. So if I wake up and I'm a boy physically, but I think I'm a girl that day, the law has to treat me, and in this case, this new law has to treat me as if I'm a girl, which means if I'm a boy wanting to access the girls' restroom, the law has to allow me. Otherwise, you're promoting a discriminatory bias against my gender.
Now, I've been trying to track this down. And listen, I've been hearing competing claims in the media. So I've tried to find the primary documentation. I've got the bill. I've got the legislative council background and all the rest. And I also have material from the Los Angeles Unified School District. And what makes that apparently interesting is that they were ahead of the rest of the state on this. Is that right?
Well, what happened is, yes, they are. They've implemented those policies that allow boys who think they're girls to access locker rooms, restrooms, you know, sports teams.
Okay, now I just have to interrupt you for a moment. Just say, having been a high school boy, I'm trying to figure this out. How in the world does that work?
Well, I don't know, but I kind of half jokingly say boys have been trying to get into girls' locker rooms for years, and now we've got the governor who's pretty much mandated it. At LA Unified, the standard they use is consistently assert yourself. So I don't know if that means you have to say it for 5 days in a row you think you're a girl, if you have to say it for two before they have to allow you into the locker room. Now, I will say LA Unified, their policies were put in place because there was a lawsuit, and rather than bankrupt the district, they kowtowed to the homosexual activist lobby and put these policies in place. But these are the policies that, if we don't pass our referendum, will be put in statewide.
Now, as I look at this, the actual law changes just a few words. I think it expands two words to four words, but language is everything. Now, let me see if I've got this right. This new law would mean that if you teach or even make reference to a family as being or marriage as a man and a woman together, you can be charged with discriminatory intent.
Well, yes, absolutely, because you are promoting a bias, and we are promoting a bias. That is how we view families, and even in California, where we passed an initiative in 2000 that says marriage is between a man and a woman, that is how marriage and families are defined in California. But to the other side, that promotes a discriminatory bias, and according to this new bill, you cannot do that. So you either have to get rid of any traditional reference, or you have to be all-inclusive. So that means when you read, you know, to your first graders, you do a little picture book that has a traditional family in it. You have to follow it up with The King and the King, or, you know, Heather Has Two Mommies, or something like that, so that you're not promoting that heterosexual traditional marriage bias.
Now, let me just ask you how this is going to play out on the ground. What's been the response? I mean, after all this went through, it went through your legislature, it was signed into law by the governor, Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. What's been the citizen response to this thus far?
The citizen response has been overwhelming. I will say not one Republican voted for this. Several Democrats either abstained or voted no. So it was no, you know, bipartisan move here. It got through with one additional vote than it needed. So it's not like it was overwhelming. And the citizens, our phones are ringing off the hook, Dr. Mueller. I mean, I think your office, it took them, you know, calling several people to try and get a hold of us, not because we didn't want to call you back. Our list is so long of citizens and media to call back. I mean, it has been outrageous, the amount. Parents are shocked that this is going on and that somehow they didn't even know this was passing.
Well, this is a national radio program, and because of that, things happen that that cause listeners to write us, and we've got to look into what's going on. I had numerous emails and contacts from people in California saying, please talk about this. And, you know, the more I looked at it, I found it was difficult to talk about without getting someone on the ground. So I really do appreciate you being on with us today.
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for having me. You know, we can't fight this alone out here in California. I, here in England, cannot, you know, do this for all the families. We need all of your listeners. You know, what happens in California doesn't stay in California. We need them to visit the website saveourkids.net. We need volunteers. We need donations. We have a very short period of time to stop this bill with our referendum, and that, you know, that's what we're going to work to do over the next 90 days.
Mrs. England, can you hold on with us for just a little bit longer to tell us
Absolutely.
How that works? Because and we're going to have to go into a break segment here, but it would be very helpful if you could stay with us. But as we do that, I just have to ask a question about the political side of this, because I'm scratching my head here in Kentucky trying to figure out how a Republican governor signs a bill that not one Republican voted for in the legislature. How does that work?
That happens all the time with Arnold. He calls it post-partisanship. He's above it all, and, you know, he's done that numerous times. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a lot of people outside of California think he's a fiscal conservative and he's not that liberal. The Republican Party's been upset with him, you know, for the last several years. He's not even a fiscal conservative. He is, you know, I don't consider him a Republican, and I never voted for him.
My guest today is Mrs. Karen England, who is Executive Director of the Capital Resource Institute there in California. She's going to be back with us in just a moment. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I'd love to hear from some listeners there in California or elsewhere. Concerned parents anywhere in this country. This is about your kids as well. If folks are going to be writing textbooks for California, they're going to make their way into your classroom just about wherever you are. The phone number 877-893-8255. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
Stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. My guest today is Karen England, who is executive director of the Capital Resource Institute, California's oldest and largest pro-life public policy organization. We're talking about the new law in California, originally known as Senate Bill 777. As I look at this new bill, what seems amazing is that two words in the older California statute said that classroom instruction or school-sponsored activities may not, quote, reflect adversely on gays, lesbians, other protected classes. The new law says that it would be wrong if it, quote, promotes a discriminatory bias, end quote. Now, Mrs. England, when I look at this, it just seems to me to be impossible to know even how this law could be applied.
Well, and their intent is to do it that way and to use language that, you know, on face value, you think, well, what does that mean? Or, you know, of course, we don't want to promote a discriminatory bias. That's bad. But all you have to do is kind of walk through it a little bit. And, of course, when you have a math textbook and there are word stories, a mom and dad were on a train and the dad got off after 5 miles and at 10 miles, you know how those word stories go. Well, they will argue that that promotes a bias towards heterosexual. You are not giving equal time. I mean, so you can see how when it's explained to people, it's like, wow, that really does promote a bias. But is that a bad thing? Is it bad to distinguish between male and female and heterosexual couples and that being the standard that we want for our families? And so they've been very crafty in how they did this, and which is why people are so outraged now that they're finding out what it really means.
Well, isn't there, discrimination is one of those hard words to use in the law, because we discriminate all the time.
We do.
We like blue better than purple, or someone might like it in the reverse. But when it comes to discrimination in this sense, it seems to me that someone's going to have to try to read the mind of a person who just simply constructs a sentence who says, and did you ask your mom and dad or dad if you could go on the field trip?
Oh, absolutely. Now they're going to have to be all-inclusive, because you're promoting, as a teacher, if you say that, you are promoting a bias towards traditional families. And you can see what a bind this puts teachers in. You talked about LA Unified School District and their current policies. Their policies state that if you know there's a boy who thinks he's a girl and wants to be called she at school, you have to call him she at school, but he when you talk to the parents. I mean, this is putting teachers in a huge bind to have to sort through all this sexual confusion to know, you know, what to call people, what not to call people.
Again, there are people here wondering about the People's Republic of California at this moment.
Yeah.
Could you please repeat that? You said that the teacher has to treat the child and speak of the child differently to the child and then to the parents?
Yes, unless the child gives permission. If you are calling the boy a she because he thinks he's a she at school, you must get that child's permission before you can let the parents know that he's sexually confused and gender confused at school. And so the instructions that I believe you have in front of you, the policies, actually talk about nouns and pronouns and what to call them. And you can't call them that if the parent doesn't know about it. You can't disclose it to the parent that you're referring to he as a she during the school day.
You know, I just honestly believe that the average Californian can't know about this.
They don't.
Otherwise, something would happen.
They don't, and that's why I appreciate you having me on and other radio shows in order to get the word out. We're a very large state. We are not as liberal and anti-family as most people believe. You know, more of our counties went for Bush in the last two elections. The problem is L.A. and San Francisco dominate things, and they dominate the media. And so we're here on the front lines trying to stand for the rest of the families in California that haven't had a voice.
And you're also trying to, excuse me for interrupting there, but I just want to make sure our listeners understand, you're also trying to do something about this, which is to launch a referendum effort.
Absolutely. absolutely. We want to take it to the people. We have filed a referendum that refers this to the people. We have 90 days to collect signatures in order to take this to the people. And if we're successful, the people will vote on this. And I'm confident they will overturn the legislature and the governor on this one.
Now, what exactly has to happen there, just so our folks can know how to help?
Well, you can go to SaveOurKids.net, and what has to happen is we have to collect a lot of money because we only have 90 days to get about 700,000 valid signatures in order to refer this to the people. Referendums are a very short period of time, which is what this is called, which is only 90 days, which started last week. We're going into the holidays, so we are going to have to pay paid petitioners to go out and collect signatures. There's no way a volunteer effort is going to get this on the ballot.
Right.
So we're getting legislators, we're getting, you know, lots of people behind us, and we need your listeners to pray for us, to volunteer with us, to donate, etc.
All right, thank you so much. My guest has been Karen England of the Capital Resource Institute. We'll put a link to that website up on our website, link to this program. Within the hour. Back with your calls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler.
This is the best of the Albert Mohler program.
I would be very interested in knowing what those of you out there who are parents in particular would think about a situation in which your child, whom you think to be a boy, could be in school all day demanding to be treated as a girl. He could be David to you and Darlene at school. At school, the teacher is required to recognize him as a girl, to call him by the girl's name he chooses, to let him go to the girl's bathroom, change his clothes in the girl's locker room. He hangs around with the girls, considers himself a girl, has to be referred to as she, and in every way recognized as a girl because that's what this student's demand would be. And yet, when Darlene's parents, David presenting himself as Darlene, when David's parents come in, unless the child explicitly gives the school the authority to reveal this, the parent just assumes he's David at school, just as everywhere else. You're talking about children. You're talking about young children. This is some of the scariest stuff I've ever heard. That is not a proposed policy. That is now the actual policy in the Los Angeles Unified School District. I have the policy in my hand. It is reference guide REF1557 from the Office of General Counsel of the Los Angeles Unified School District. And it's just amazing stuff. If you've got something to say about this, call me at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From a Christian worldview perspective, this gets us right back to what we were talking about last week, and that is parental authority. Parental rights when it comes to the education of children. And I mean exactly what I said to Mrs. England, our guest. If indeed the people of California knew about this, I can't believe they'd sit still for it. You know, one of the things about California you have to keep in mind, and I appreciate what she said. She said, we're not as liberal as people think we are. It's the elites in certain urban areas such as L.A. and San Francisco that are really driving this. I understand that. I've been to California. I'm there fairly regularly, and I know that's true. Furthermore, a lot of the growth in California is among Hispanics. And Hispanics have a very strong commitment to the family. And I think long-term, California might be even more conservative when it comes to a lot of these family issues. For instance, the mayor of Los Angeles right now is in trouble, even though he is himself Hispanic with a lot of Hispanic Americans because of the way he has treated his wife and his marriage and his family. And so there is a deep commitment to family that comes out in different ways. I just have to believe that the average Californian doesn't know about this. But what I was reading from is indeed a memorandum from the Office of General Counsel of the Los Angeles Unified School District. But what we've been talking about is the same kind of law that has been now passed by the legislature in California and signed into law by California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. You heard Karen England say that her group is launching an effort to try to repeal the law by referendum. Now, that makes California just a little bit different than most other states. In most other states, the citizens don't have that kind of right, power, or authority. But California, because of the nature of its constitution, allows for these referenda and propositions. You may remember Proposition 11, other famous propositions that have come out of that state. You may recall that Arnold Schwarzenegger is in office because of a recall effort, again, something that's unusual in other states. But not in California. It's in the law, and it happened. Gray Davis was voted out of office. Arnold Schwarzenegger was voted into office. Since then, has been elected in his own right to a term. And I was just fascinated just in the political dynamic of this. My bigger concerns are worldview concerns, but let's just think the politics for a minute. Here is a piece of legislation that didn't have a single Republican vote in the entire legislative process, and a Republican governor voted it into action. He calls it post-partisan. I think it's post-rational. It's just another sign to us of what happens when politicians sign on to agendas that those who elected them just never envisioned. And that is almost certainly the case there, where you have a very socially liberal governor, but who would have imagined that his social liberalism would have led him to sign into law something as almost unthinkable as this. Now, when you start looking at this material, you realize that it is a huge educational project. That's why I feel for those who are in California are fighting this fight. They've got a very limited amount of time to try to inform people in California, and that's their primary audience. That's where they have to get 700,000 valid signatures for this referendum just within the next few weeks. Now, if you are in California listening to what we have to say here, if you are, as I hope and pray you are, deeply concerned about this, I hope that you will make sure that you support this effort, that you get behind it, that you make sure your signature is on those forms that will be recognized as valid signatures. I hope you also go to the website at saveourkids.net, and as you do, you'll find out how you can help. I rarely try to put this kind of emphasis on this program behind something so specific as one state and one situation, but if it's California, it's not just one state. It'd be worth doing this if this were just about California, but you're talking about the most populous state in the union, and you're also talking about a state that is an engine for social experimentation that spreads eventually from coast to coast. And I know right now there are people listening to my voice who say, I'm in South Carolina, I'm not worried about this. I'm in West Virginia, I'm not worried about this. I'm in Cleveland, I'm in Miami, Tampa, I'm in Texas, I'm not worried about this. Well, you better worry about it, and I want to tell you two reasons why. The first reason is what you might call the soft argument. The soft argument is this. It may be that you are right that your state legislature and your governor wouldn't come within 1,000 miles of a bill like this. And you better be thankful that that's so, but you better not count on the fact that it will always be so. But I understand that there are a lot of people in this country who right now are saying, we're not under the threat of this kind of law. But that's the soft argument. Here's the hard argument. The people writing the textbooks that your children are going to read are going to be writing textbooks because they want them to be bought in California. If they publish a major textbook and it's not bought in California, then they're losing the biggest market, single state market, of the entire school textbook industry. So this is the way it starts to work. It's regulated by the marketplace. Very soon the marketplace is going to say, if you're going to write a textbook and you're going to write on social studies for, say, 10th graders, you're going to have to make it acceptable. And I would just have to say, I think that's going to be a Herculean task of political correctness anyway. I mean, because after all, where do you end the diversity? But the point is still there. You're going to have to try to market it to California. If you do, then you may be in Chamblee, Georgia, or you may be in Shaker Heights, Ohio, or you may be in some place you think is just miles and miles away from the infection of this kind of agenda. But the books your children read, right there in Polk County, Florida, right there in Fort Worth, Texas, right there in the middle of the Great Plains and Farm Belt America and Kansas and Missouri, your kids are going to be reading textbooks written to pass muster to people in California who say you can't discriminate in any way on the basis of sexuality, gender, family structure. You know, folks, you start to think about that and you realize you don't have to look to the future to see the kind of insanity that this postmodern worldview produces. It's very much right now visible in the present for all who have eyes to see. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Mueller Program.
Interesting debates in America these days, and of course, so one of the most interesting right now is between those who believe in God and militant atheists who are really pushing their ideas. A lot of best-selling books out there, a lot of FaceTime on the talk shows and all the rest. Denise D'Souza is out with a new book. The book is entitled, What's So Great About Christianity? And you can find it in your local bookstore. He's also written the forum piece, which is almost a full page in today's edition of USA Today. And you can find this at your local newsstand. Of course, you can go to the website of USA Today and find it as well. The article is entitled "A Christian Foundation." Here's how he ends it, and it's really interesting. Listen to this. There are some atheists and even some Christians who admit that theism and Christianity have shaped the core institutions and values of America and the West. But now that we have these values, they say, why do we still need God and Christianity? Oddly enough, he answers, the answer is supplied by Nietzsche. That's Friedrich Nietzsche, the nihilistic philosopher. He goes on to say, Nietzsche argued that since the Christian God is the foundation of Western values, the death of God must necessarily mean the erosion and ultimate collapse of those values. Remove the base, and the whole building will slowly crumble. For a while, Nietzsche conceded, people would out of custom or habit continue to respect human life and treat people with equal dignity. But eventually there would be a ferocious assault on these values, and practices once unthinkable, such as the killing of people deemed inferior, undesirable, would once again occur. This is precisely what we have seen in our time, and Nietzsche predicted that it will only get worse. That's absolutely true. Denise D'Souza is making a very important point here, and it's one we've made ourselves in many different ways. We're living as a society on the residue of a Christian worldview. In other words, there are still parts and remnants. There is still a residue of the Christian worldview out there. People still think that, there's something at least interesting about the fact that babies are born outside of marriage, that it's not quite normal. There are still people out there who believe that there is a right and there is a wrong. There are still people out there who follow Christian customs, even though they no longer believe in the truths of Christianity. But the reality is, as Nietzsche did foresee, that residue will eventually get reduced down to almost nothing. Those parts and pieces of Christian truth and Christian habit and custom that still are found in the culture will give way to other ideas, and the culture will be shaped in a very different way. You see, without Christian truth, you will not have Christian behavior. Without Christian conviction, you will not have Christian morality. Not for long. Friedrich Nietzsche must be smiling from the grave as he looks at many of the arguments being made in America today. And furthermore, he himself was, of course, a European, and all he has to do is look at European history in the 20th and now in the 21st centuries, and he sees exactly come to pass what he predicted. And furthermore, in so many ways, what he celebrated and wanted to happen. Tomorrow we're going to come back for a conversation with one of America's most famous Christian intellectuals, Alvin Plantinga, the University of Notre Dame. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.